Hello, I'm Mark Riley, and this is The Intersection, the intersection of politics and culture. Thank you so much for joining me on this episode of my continuing podcast. We're going to talk a bit about leadership. Leadership is an interesting topic given the pandemic through which we are now going. Who's a leader and who's not a leader? You know, I have friends who I've known for very long periods of time, and we do not see eye to eye at all about politics, for example. However, many of these same people do understand, as I do, I believe, what a leader is and what leadership is. Now, I could sit here and recite a list of great leaders I've met, leaders I've worked for, leaders I've played for, but I would probably leave somebody out, and I don't necessarily want to do that. In the devastating wake of the coronavirus, the question of leadership becomes crucial. It takes on an entirely new dimension. The loss of life alone demands scrutiny of leaders around the world with an eye toward understanding who is leading and who is fronting. Let's take, for an example, the United States. Here we have a leader who tells his people to wear masks while at the same time saying he won't use one. Why, you might ask? Because he can't imagine talking to a dictator through a mask. Those are his words, not mine. Ask yourself, no matter what your political ideology, is this in fact leadership? Really? I mean, one of the things I learned fairly early on in life, when I was working for a large department store which shall remain nameless, is that we had one supervisor who we all respected. I can't even remember his name anymore. That's how long ago it was. But we all respected this guy because he said to us as a group, I will not ask you to do anything that I haven't done and that I would not do. That, to me, was leadership. But maybe I quibble. Maybe people have differing definitions of what leadership is. Let's look for a moment at the record of this American president in response to the coronavirus. First, there was denial that it even posed a problem. That lasted a while, actually up to the beginning of last month. Then he formed a task force led by his vice president, Mike Pence, a man who botched his state's response to the AIDS crisis when he was governor. Don't ask me, ask some of the victims of AIDS in the state of Indiana. In Donald Trump's press briefings, he has downplayed the severity of the pandemic by saying he would have it under control. He's saying that again throughout the month of February. He also said anyone who wanted to get a test could get one. He overhyped a potential vaccine and continues to do so. He said people could resume their normal lives by Easter Sunday, and most recently, that the virus would simply go away. Now, all of those things have not been true at the time he said them. And later on in this podcast, we'll talk a little bit about how people can take one position one month and take a completely different position another month and jump back and say, well, I never said that. I didn't do that. It's absolutely amazing. Now, when you look at this, we're talking here about the leader of the most powerful nation on the planet. Donald Trump was a businessman at one point, but he's not anymore. He is president of the United States. And when we talk about leadership, we have to ask ourselves, is he up to the task? Is he capable mentally, emotionally, intellectually, capable of leading this nation during this terrible, terrible time? What's most amazing is that he's convinced his supporters that he represents strong, effective leadership. And here's where I have to ask some of my friends who support him, and who, by the way, know leadership when they see it, is this actually leadership? You know, one guy who was a leader among a group of people I was part of, his nickname was The Boss. And everybody called him The Boss because his leadership was unquestioned, unchallenged, and was an inspiration to everybody who played under his leadership. And I'm talking about a drum and bugle corps now. I was part of a drum line. And we were inspired by this man we call The Boss. I'm sure he wouldn't mind me calling his name. His name was Wes Myers. So I didn't say was, is Wes Myers. That's leadership. I worked for 35 years for a man by the name of Percy Sutton, who wasn't just a leader, didn't just exert leadership every day that I worked for him, but also had visionary leadership. This is what I mean by leaders. The great Nelson Mandela was a leader. FDR, Churchill, although Churchill was a bit of a racist, they were still leaders. The African leaders that led their countries out from under the yoke of colonialism, they were leaders. And here we have this guy posing, and I do emphasize posing as a leader. Does someone want to argue, for example, that either Franklin Delano Roosevelt or Winston Churchill, because everybody seems to be referring to the Second World War. Even the Queen, when she spoke, talked about the Second World War. Would they have tolerated the slack in producing tests and ventilators? Would people have been able to go to Winston Churchill and say, "Sorry, Mr. Churchill, we can't make the number of Spitfires we need to fight the Nazis"? You got to be kidding me. Same with the B-17s in the US. When it was time to mobilize during wartime, these leaders made it happen. And yet we sit here in the year 2020 and watch as people squabble over who's supposed to provide ventilators, who's supposed to provide equipment to keep our caregivers safe. Squabbling, not saying to people, "Okay, if we need these things and we don't have the numbers, how about we hire people who've been thrown out of work, 10 million in 2 weeks? How about we hire some of them? We teach them how to make these things and we put them to work." Is there a problem with that? Is that rocket science? I submit to you, ladies and gentlemen, that a leader would have done this. But again, I don't want to put words in other people's mouths. I just don't think that we have a leader in the United States at this point. I just don't. He's not a leader, plain and simple. And if all this wasn't bad enough, there's Jared Kushner, Donald Trump's son-in-law, which seems to be his only qualification to being involved in the coronavirus response whatso-freaking-ever. Michelle Goldberg, opinion columnist in the New York Times, has a superb takedown of Jared Kushner a few days ago. The bottom line is this: allowing Jared Kushner to be part of a coronavirus task force is itself showing a lack of leadership. And for Jared Kushner to sit there and say to people, "Well, the stockpile that the federal government has, that's not for the states, that's for us." That's insane. Given the numbers of people who are dying, given the numbers of people who died while he was uttering those words, that is malfeasance of an extraordinary, and I do mean extraordinary, level. And I have to say, there are some people in the world who are actually leading. Yes, leaders. Now, let's take, for example, the president of Taiwan. Her name is Tsai Ing-wen. And my guess is most people have never, ever heard of this lady. I hadn't, until I read a CNN article about why Taiwan's response to the coronavirus was the best, if not among the best, in the world. Long story short, Taiwan took action early to combat the virus, steps that the rest of the world were slow in implementing, and which the United States started implementing with glacial speed. Keep in mind, ladies and gentlemen, keep this in mind. There are still states in America that are not on lockdown, whose governors say, well, no, we advise people to stay, but we're not making people stay. And you know what they all have in common? They are all supporters of this president, all of them. Now, some people may say that a lack of leadership at the top filters down to a lack of leadership on other levels. I would say that's probably true in this case. But we're not talking about theory here. We're talking about lives. Hundreds lost in a 24-hour period in this country. That's inexcusable given the technology. It's inexcusable given who we say we are as Americans. We are the people who are supposed to be able to get things done. That's what Donald Trump got elected to do. I would say, and again, this is just me, I would say he has been found wanting. But you know, there's one thing that jumped out at me when I was reading this piece about Taiwan and their response. They made spreading misinformation about the coronavirus a criminal offense. Imagine what that would mean right here in the good old USA. Oh well, up next, what would happen in the US if misinformation about the coronavirus was a crime? Let's look at the role of media in a minute. This is The Intersection. We're back. This is The Intersection. My name is Mark Riley, and I want to thank you again for tuning into my podcast. For updates, like my Facebook page at Mark Riley Media. You know, in a world divided by political ideology, what media do people consume? And just as importantly, what media do they in fact believe? In the midst of a global pandemic, these questions take on a new significance. So too has the power of social media, where unsubstantiated rumors end up being circulated as fact. Not all that's on social media, and I should emphasize this, not all the posts on social media are lies, not all the posts are deliberate distortions, etc., etc., but it seems as though social media is a place where, at least in the short term, things can be put out and not necessarily be challenged immediately. Now, one of the most dangerous rumors, it turns out, was downplaying the severity of the coronavirus in its early stages. There's evidence now that the slow political response was a byproduct of conservative media skepticism of how bad things were in the first place and how bad things could end up being. This was, by the way, a top-down thing, with the President of the United States leading a chorus of politicians and pundits asserting in some cases that the whole thing was a plot hatched by the Democratic Party. There was, of course, no evidence of this, but none was needed. What gave all of this an Alice in Wonderland quality was how quickly the same people who downplayed the severity of coronavirus first, then denied they had done any such thing, and applauded the late political response at the same time. And these folks know who they are. I don't have to run through a litany of them. But if you follow conservative media, or if you follow progressive responses to conservative media, you know who I'm talking about. People, oh, it's fake. Oh, it's the Chinese. Oh, it's this. Oh, it's that. Oh, it's the other. And then when people are dying by the thousands, they suddenly turn around and say, oh, no, I never believed that this was some kind of fake situation. I always played up the severity of the coronavirus. And by the way, misinformation in media is not limited by ideology. I want to emphasize that. I have seen all manners of theories, all manner that is, of theories, cures, and reasons for coronavirus. And they're not all promoted by, quote, conservative media. The role of 5G is one false rumor that simply will not go away. I have seen article after article after article debunking this notion that 5G is in any way linked to the coronavirus. Yet, it persists. And it's like one of those situations where it starts out in a small group and it just circulates and circulates and circulates. There was also a rumor at one time that said black people were immune from the coronavirus because of our melanin, the melanin in our skin. There's other rumors that say gargling with certain liquids would immunize people from catching the virus. Now, all of this stuff, I mean, first of all, in terms of black people, no less a personage than Idris Elba has tested positive for coronavirus. People I know have died from it. Black people I know have died from it. Yet at first, people say, well, no, black people can't get it. You know, and it's sad. It is truly, truly sad. And of course, all of this stuff has been disproved by science. And I just, you know, skimmed the surface of some of the more outlandish rumors. But in some cases, people who read and pass these things along don't see the articles that debunk what they're saying. That means the net result is that people are being asked to sort through competing versions of what they should be doing. Anybody remember like a month and a half ago, they were saying, people don't need to wear masks. And within the last 48 hours, medical experts are saying, no, you need to wear a mask. What are people to do under these circumstances? And by the way, I mentioned this earlier, not all states in America have issued stay-at-home orders, which could explain why some people are simply ignoring them. Some of you may have heard about the students who went down to Cabo San Lucas in Mexico and partied together. I think it was like 70 of them, and 44 of them have tested positive for the coronavirus. And when you have people who follow foolishness, that's what ends up happening. I can see it in the park across the street from where I am right now. There are going to be some people who ignore social distancing, which is the one thing that people say will have the long-range tendency to lower the incidence of infection by this virus. But there are people who just like ignore it. It's like, no, don't worry about it. There are people who are saying now, you know what? We may have to get tougher on people who don't do social distancing, who are out partying, out going to the beach, out doing what they normally would do on a normal spring day. That is totally understandable. The idea that people want to do what they would normally do, but they can't. They simply cannot. And at a point, that has to be driven home. And all of this foolishness that's coming out of many different spheres, the conservative media sphere and all the others, it has to be stopped. Now, that doesn't mean that you abrogate freedom of the press, because in Taiwan, they lock you up. You misinform the public about the coronavirus. I'm not saying that has to happen in the United States. But at a point, I suggest that people begin to pay close attention to where your information on the coronavirus comes from. When you can, get corroboration. I mean, it's kind of difficult for me to fathom this because as someone who was trained as a journalist, I always try to corroborate what I'm told, what I read in articles, facts. When facts are, or when information is presented to me as fact, my natural inclination is to say, okay, well, let's find out how much fact there is in this stuff. Even from publications that, for want of a better term, toe a progressive line, because they're not all saints. But the fact of the matter is, I do that myself. For me, it's almost instinctive to look and check and double check and make sure. And there are certain things when I see, well, black people aren't going to get the coronavirus. I've jumped that right off the top. I said, wait a minute, somebody's playing games here. Well, I'm not saying that you all have to become journalists, although it wouldn't be a bad idea if more people became citizen journalists. But check your facts. Please, folks, lives are at stake here. When you can, get corroboration from a second source, from a third source, from wherever you need to be comfortable with the information that you're being presented. And finally, what are you doing while you stay at home to fight the coronavirus pandemic? This is The Intercept.
What I do is I collect stories. Stories, songs, poems. I seek out the elders and garner stories and songs and poems. Stories and songs and poems. Characterized critically as, oh, that's that 60s stuff. Like somebody doing old rock and roll will be doing that 50s stuff. Well, or this is the 90s, you know. I have a good friend in the East. Good singer and a good folk singer, a good song collector, who comes and listens to my shows and says, you sing a lot about the past. You always sing about the past. You can't live in the past, you know. And I say to him, I can go outside and pick up a rock that's older than the oldest song you know and bring it back in here and drop it on your foot. Now the past didn't go anywhere. Did it. It's right here, right now. I always thought that anybody who told me I couldn't live in the past was trying to get me to forget something that if I remembered it would get him in serious trouble.
No, it's this not. Is The Intersection. My name is Mark Riley. Thank you so much for sticking with us. With so many people closed up in their houses, locked down, as it were, I thought it might be interesting to hear from people about how you're coping with this self-isolation / quarantine, or however you want to describe it. For me, and many of my friends, music has been the answer. It always will be, no matter what, for me. It's the thing that calms me, it's the thing that inspires me, And different types of music inspire me at different times of the day, different days of the week. It's across the board. Music, in fact, for me, is the answer. And I have been blessed, and I do mean blessed, by being friends with a lot of people who make great playlists of music. If I sat here and named everybody, just like with the leaders, I'd forget people. But people like my good friend Joey Janos, people like Hard-Hittin' Harry from Brooklyn, people like Colleen Cosmo Murphy in London, people all over the globe, Kenny Carpenter in Italy. Colleen, in fact, actually posted on Facebook about the music of Claude Debussy. And next thing you know, dozens of comments came in. Now, I should say, Colleen is, for want of a better term, a club DJ. She plays dance music. But the thread she started on Debussy got dozens upon dozens of comments. And you see, it's not just the music that you're comfortable with, or for want of a better term, the tempo of your familiar. Many times, particularly if you're in this kind of isolated situation, particularly if you're alone, you have the opportunity to start exploring things that you might not explore under normal circumstances. And for me, music is so critically and crucially important. Paul Raffelli and Barbie Burdish do a show every week called Love Injection, and it's on the Lot Radio. And my Saturday mornings, or now Saturday afternoons, aren't complete without listening to them and hearing some of the interesting stuff that they play. Again, not all dance music. Some of my other friends have focused on food, posting pictures of their own homemade dishes. I'm talking about people like Marianne Ponzo-Terso, who I've known for a very long time, known her husband for a very long time. Sly Francis, who is an amazing human being, and I'm privileged to call him my friend. Sly cooks his own dishes, from pizza to sourdough bread. You name it, the man can cook. I don't know how he stayed single for some. I figured a woman would have married him just so she could eat. Sly can certainly cook. Some younger people are using software platforms like Zoom. I have no idea what Zoom is, but people use these platforms to host virtual happy hours with their friends from around the world. I know this because my daughter is using it for just that purpose. Let me not preclude your ways of getting through this. Your ways may be drastically different than my ways. And I say this knowing that some of you are mourning the loss of loved ones. So, and by the way, mourning the loss of loved ones when you cannot even make funeral arrangements for those loved ones. So I understand and I feel your pain. And hopefully you're going to find the fortitude to get yourself through this. So if there's something I'm missing, if there's some way that you're getting through it, please hit me up. Please let me know. Send me an email, mark@markreillymedia.com. And again, if there's a topic you want me to cover, hit me up, mark@markreillymedia.com. I want to, again, because I did this in a video, but I want to say it again. I want to shout out the caregivers in all their incarnations, whether the doctors, registered nurses, licensed practical nurses, nurses assistants, home health attendants, nursing home workers, all of the good people, and particularly the folks at 1199 SEIU, where I used to work, who are putting their lives on the line. And somebody suggested in a post recently that people who are attending college ought to have, who are caregivers and who have done this work, ought to have their college loans totally 100% forgiven. And I agree with that 100%. Thank you so much for listening. The executive producer of The Intersection is Ms. Kim Jack Riley. Until we meet again, please stay safe and stay well.